Welcome to the Henry Raine Show here on WWPR, 1490 AM. Of course, that was the Black Eyed Peas and Ariana Grande from the One Love Manchester concert in London, England this past week. And it was reminded to me that that was an old theme song that we used to use about 10 years ago on this show. And seems very appropriate to bring it back. And not as old as that, but actually, maybe one of the, becoming one of the old bulls of Florida and Tampa Bay journalism is our next guest, and he has been very patient in waiting to get on, and I want to thank him publicly for that. Mitch Perry, FloridaPolitics.com, thank you for joining us.
Hey, Henry, good afternoon.
Yes, well, it is now talking to you, Mitch, and let me just take a quick look. It looks like the sound is working well and coming through. You are. I brought this up the last time you were with us back in April or March, and you're becoming one of the old bulls of the Florida journalism, and always a bull, never a steer.
Well, you know, the thing is, when I first came to Tampa to cover politics, like back in the early 2000s, in the year 2000, so many reporters have like moved on to public relations or just other publications or what have you. So yeah, it says something for longevity. If you just stick around long enough, you know, you become like this seasoned pro kind of thing. So yeah, I'm enjoying it more than ever, following what's going on here in the Tampa Bay area, Florida, nationally as well.
Well, and there's plenty going on nationally this week, and really every week for the past 4 or 5 months. There's plenty to talk about. We had the testimony of FBI Director Comey in front of Congress. We've had the next day the Romanian president next to him, President Trump, taking questions in a press conference format. And let's get right into this. I want to play this first one for you, and maybe we'll go into the second one very quickly. But there's a certain theme between these two. I don't know. I may not have sent you the second one, but it's a variation on this theme. Let's go with FBI Director Comey. This is from his opening statements this week on Thursday.
The administration then chose to defame me and, more importantly, the FBI by saying that the organization was in disarray, that it was poorly led, that the workforce had lost confidence in its leader.
Those
were lies, plain and simple. And I am so sorry that the FBI workforce had to hear them, and I'm so sorry that the American people told them.
Well, lies, plain and simple, Mitch. In that particular soundbite, he's only talking about the White House, so it's a general administration. But as you were watching this, were you struck by the starkness of some of the language?
Well, I mean, that was really the dramatic part, the most dramatic, you know, just him coming out the first in his opening statement and talking about lies, right? You accuse the president of lying to you, and you're the former FBI director. You know, that's a pretty, you know, damning comment there. And, you know, we've seen Trump yesterday at that press conference basically deny it. It's almost like a he said thing. Yeah, you know, I mean, here we are. You know, it was quite a spectacle on Thursday. And, you know, I'm reading right now, Henry, by the way, is that the Senate Judiciary Committee, that was in front of the Intelligence Committee, of course, on Thursday, the Senate Judiciary Committee is debating whether to compel James Comey to testify before them. So we could have round two of James Comey in D.C.
Well, and we could even have a round three, if you will, because there has been a call to produce the possible tape recordings.
Yeah, I think as Trump said yesterday, you'll be surprised about it, which I have no idea what he meant by that. Does anybody out there listening to us believe there are actually tapes? Okay, I mean, I think that that is very dubious. It always has been. But as James Comey said, Lordy, if there's tapes, bring them on.
Well, he did speak also to the president's character in questioning that followed the opening statement. The initial soundbite was about the White House in general. Here's what FBI Director Comey was thinking about President Trump's character.
What was it about that meeting that led you to determine that you needed to start putting down a written record?
A combination of things. I think the circumstances, the subject matter, and the person I was interacting with. Circumstances first, I was alone with the President of the United States. for the president-elect, soon to be president. The subject matter, I was talking about matters that touch on the FBI's core responsibility and that relate to the president, president-elect, personally, and then the nature of the person. I was honestly concerned that he might lie about the nature of our meeting, and so I thought it really important to document. That combination of things I'd never experienced before, but it led me to believe I got to write it down, and I got to write it down in a very detailed way.
Well, it's not the first person that we've heard say they were worried about being left alone with the president. Maybe the first person we've heard publicly of that gender saying this. But, you know, it's striking to me, and just to hear an FBI director talk about the potential of the president lying.
Right.
It's funny, and I, all the other times I've seen FBI directors speak, he is speaking in measured phrases and words, and this wasn't over the top, but he certainly didn't hold back on, in my opinion, on his contempt and dislike of the president. Did you find it that way?
Well, yeah. Look, Donald Trump is so different than any other president we've ever had. Certainly, I think, in both of our lifetimes, Henry, right? I mean, he just is, in terms of his norms, in terms of his behavior. You know, some Trump supporters are saying, and maybe accurately saying, that really this hearing, though, did not really bruise up the president in terms of the legal jeopardy he may or may not be in, right? I mean, there's this whole issue about whether he obstructed justice or not. I certainly am not a legal attorney. I don't really know what the deal is there. The point being about this whole collusion with Russia, I think that that's still very debatable. I mean, you have the, former FBI Director Mueller looking at that. But what came across more than anything else in the almost 3 hours that Comey testified is simply, you're right, the contempt that he had for Trump, because the way that Trump has behaved both on the campaign trail and as president, is very different than what we've ever seen. Nobody will dispute that, right? And so when it comes to these really intense legal matters of potential investigation and being asked about whether he should pursue this, this investigation, what have you, when he's telling people to walk out of the room and just make it him and Comey. I mean, I don't think anybody, I'm definitely reading a lot of criticism of James Comey by some folks, and we know Comey's been a controversial figure for over, a year, going back to the Hillary Clinton investigation and his public denunciation without the actual indictment of her last summer. But nevertheless, I don't find anybody questioning that these memos that he wrote, for example, that we haven't really seen yet, I don't know if we'll see them or not, but in terms of the fact that, because theoretically, right, somebody could write anything and it could be false, right, because it's just, again, some person's interpretation of an event. But I think if nothing else, James Comey came across very compelling, very believable, very human on Thursday, including the fact that, the fact that he might be in some trouble about this leaking of this, one of those memos to a friend that was with the New York Times. People are saying he's kind of like, "What? You're a wimp. Why didn't you just confront the president right then and there?" And I think I personally can see why he didn't do that, right? I mean, it's like you don't want to believe the worst about anybody in the president of the United States, which is, why you maybe don't challenge him immediately. I mean, James Comey is a political player, right? He's been a D.C. guy for a long time, involved in the highest levels in the U.S. and U.S. Attorney's Office, what have you. So he's a player. He's very much a political player. And some people, that bother some people because they think he's kind of maybe two-faced or what have you. He wants to be this Boy Scout, but yet he's kind of a cunning political player. But I think he comes across very believable, though, right? And I think, and again, in a matchup of who do you want to believe here, Donald Trump or James Comey, I think most people are going to believe Comey, even if it doesn't mean we mean that there's anything that really Donald Trump has done illegally, So.
Well, let's go back to one of the original questions of the policy and the leading into the investigation. I do want to come back to whether there was obstruction of justice or not. But there was a moment there when the FBI Director Comey is saying what he feels is at stake. I want to play that, and you can all take it as face value. But I again want to, I'm probably going to drag Mitch someplace where he isn't all that comfortable going, but we'll see.
That using technical intrusion and lots of other methods tried to shape the way we think, we vote, we act. That is a big deal, and people need to recognize it. It's not about Republicans or Democrats. They're coming after America, which I hope we all love equally. They want to undermine our credibility in the face of the world. They think that this great experiment of ours is a threat to them, and so they're going to try to run it down and dirty it up as much as possible. That's what this is about, and they will be back because we remain, as difficult as we can be with each other, we remain that shining city on the hill, and they don't like it.
So there, FBI Director Comey wraps himself in the flag. He talks about the great threat to the United States of America. And I'm also going to come back to this, but I'm giving you a heads up that I've been disturbed over the last several months, even since before the election, about some of the language that's used on the seemingly progressive network MSNBC about this. But this idea that this is such a huge, great attack. I mean, let's look at what actually happened. Even if we attribute it to the Russians, we're going to give them the argument that somehow either supporters of Russia or people in the Russian state apparatus actually did this. They hack into emails and they leak emails that would influence opinion. They may have sent phishing emails to miscellaneous supervisor of elections office hoping to get access to a computer. This is not a major attack on the United States, in my opinion. This is business as usual, in my opinion, the accumulation of intelligence, the dissemination of intelligence, the dissemination of disinformation, which it seems to be what every government on the planet does. And if you look at our history, in the recent history, in President Putin's last election, we had major efforts to influence that. And if you go outside his border to Georgia and the Ukraine and other areas, we were very active in those elections. So this outrage that we have, it just seems a little bit too useful for the players that want to use it. What do you think?
Well, I will agree with you that I am still waiting to see, because we know our intelligence, the CIA, FBI, is investigating, right, the full extent of what the Russia involvement was. And so we haven't been told yet what the complete story is. But you're right, you're mentioning what we know publicly already. I agree with you in the terms of the emails, for example. Now you mentioned, that really hasn't been done to a certain level in the past, you know, in our elections. But it was really a drip by drip kind of negative thing, but because there were so many of those emails, right, that were taken from the DNC that WikiLeaks distributed and sent out, you know, there was a lot of there's some embarrassing things there about some DNC members. Debbie Wasserman Schultz did not come out looking very great out of all that. Donna Brazile did not. But yeah, I mean John Podesta, they took his emails, right, the Clinton campaign manager. But if that's the worst, I've never subscribed the idea that that by itself would somehow turn the election around in favor of Donald Trump. What we have heard is that the Russian government wanted to definitely play havoc in our election season, but that they certainly never really believed, because let's face it, nobody really believed Donald Trump was ever going to win. I mean, you know, he always had a chance. I should never say nobody didn't believe it, but it was still considered a shocking upset that not he actually won the election. And the fact that this idea that Russia, you know, that he's this Manchurian candidate for Russia, I don't think it's fair. I think that Trump is not very good at, you know, arguing. He certainly has been so protective about Russia and acted in a certain behavior that has made people want to believe the worst in terms of this relationship. And there are these peripheral figures that have been involved somewhat, perhaps Carter Page, Paul Manafort, Roger Stone. Those are all still being investigated, but those are on the outside. Jim Comey confirmed what he said to Donald Trump earlier, which is that you sir, directly are not being investigated. Now, that doesn't mean ultimately he's, you know, as people have said, not being investigated now, but at the time he was. And so I'm with you, Henry. I don't necessarily want to say that, like, America has done the equivalent of this. I'm just saying that what we know publicly, at least of now, about Russia's involvement, I want to know the whole story because, you know, we need to be careful in 2020, and because they keep on saying they're going to keep on doing this again. But I've always said there's a lot of smoke, but not fire yet. I have not seen that at all in this thing. And I do think that some of the media is super jazzed up about this and is, you know, working it every day. I don't know. I get bored by some of it, quite frankly. You know, I mean, I really think that sometimes that there are enough things going on with the Trump administration in Washington, D.C. right now that people aren't paying attention to. They're definitely having real life impacts already, and there's more. You know, we got this health care bill that's going to be coming out maybe in the next few weeks of the Senate. That's very serious. Look, the House the other day overturned the Dodd-Frank bill, right? I mean, that came out in the wake of the financial problems of a decade ago. That's significant. That's going to affect, I think it's going to affect some people in certain ways and the way the banks work. So I think that we're getting kind of, I don't want to say distracted, because I think there are some serious things going on here with this, and it's become its own drama. But I just don't see the fire yet when it comes to Russia.
Well, growing up in the height of the Cold War, especially here in Florida, I was thinking it was either in kindergarten or first grade during the Cuban Missile Crisis. And where there was real tension and real danger. And I don't remember going through the 60s and the 70s when the normal activities of espionage, which is what I consider anything we've heard about right now, espionage was being phrased by the media as though the U.S. was attacked. When they talked about an attack on the U.S. back in the day, they were talking about a real violent attack. And the use by some hosts, especially on MSNBC, to want to use the word an attack on the United States, not an attack on our election system, but an attack on the United States. The attempt by some of the hosts there, they continually choose to use the term Muslim ban instead of travel ban. There's plenty with the Trump administration that would cause a progressive to want change and a different outcome and a different president. But when they say and edit some of the audio where, for example, the Lester Holt interview where it says the comments about the Russia investigation was in his mind, but he never makes the statement that is why I did it. He actually follows with a different sentence. And I've seen that edited on the later host on MSNBC to say he said this. I mean, I think we're getting to the point where between the two cable networks, I'm not at equivalence yet between the way Fox over the years has put a false narrative out. But I think we're getting to the point where the marketing of some of these hosts is getting to the approaching a false narrative. I don't know if you feel that way or not.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, I don't. Well, I do watch some MSNBC, and I watch a little bit of CNN, but Henry, I can't really watch them too much, because basically they're like talk radio, right, in terms of, like, let's just put some folks on here and just chat about what the latest has happened in the news today. I find a lot of it just very lazy, you know, in terms of, like, anything you can really learn out of it. I mean, I think it's fine for background, it's fun to watch, but I really, and I say, I've been suggesting this to my friends, I mean, I just don't think that, you know, you're really going to get too much out of that format whatsoever. I probably haven't been paying attention like you have in terms of some of the you're talking about some of the hosts on MSNBC on this. But I just think overall, again, I think that, look, it's a made-for-cable TV kind of drama, right? I mean, let's be honest. I mean, Trump was great for ratings during the campaign because he was and is a very interesting personality. He can be very funny. He can now. It's a little different now that he's in office, I believe. But when he was running for office, the reason that the networks went to him for his speeches live was because they were very unique. They were very different than your typical political speech. You know, in terms of you didn't know what he was going to say. He was so unconventional. And I know some people have accused the networks of abetting him and allowing him somehow, you know, to win because they gave him so much coverage. But hey, you know, cable news is about getting eyeballs, right? I mean, you know, we attracting an audience. So I kind of got that. I just think that they've been kind of lazy. I mean, there's been some good reporting going on, but there's much more, you know, just basically, I mean, CNN's the worst on this, right? Because they got to have the Trump supporters too, along with the Trump critics. And so you've seen Jeffrey Ward, for example, right? I mean, some of the things this man says, you know, I mean, are just so outrageous, but, you know, they want to have a point counterpoint kind of thing. So you've got to have, you just can't have all these people bashing on Donald Trump. So I guess my thing, I think, you know, we should always be you know, monitoring our media closely and scrutinizing whatever we get. I think that everybody should do that. And I think that, you know, I just think, again, my thing is that there's a lot going on politically right now, but it is, and to the problem for Donald Trump and for the Republicans is, right, they've got all this power right now, right? They've got the House, the Senate, the Supreme Court, the presidency, and yet what have they done so far in 2017? And for better or for worse, and I know they don't like this investigation, all these things going on, this thing is taking over Washington, you know, this whole issue with Russia, and it's hurting them trying to get their agenda passed, which, you know, if you're a Democrat, you might be okay with. But I talk to Democrats, right, who want to be doing things, right, and in some cases working with Republicans on getting, you know, that's what they were elected for, and we're really just being taken over by this whole Russia thing in a way that it's just eclipsing everything, and I think that's not good for our society right now, actually.
We're speaking with Mitch Perry. He is a journalist, a longtime Tampa Bay presence. You can get his work at floridapolitics.com. And what are you working on there now, Mitch?
Well, also I should say stpetersblog.com, which is the Tampa Bay area version. You know, I've been writing on a lot of different things this week. David Jolly, the Pinellas County former congressman who lost to Charlie Crist, he was on Bill Maher last night. I don't know if you saw that. And that was, of course, a really hyped show because of Bill Maher after saying the N-word last week. So there was a lot of expectation about what was going to happen on that show. But anyway, I interviewed Jolly this week, and that was a big deal for him to get on that exposure on that cable show. I've been writing a lot about some local stuff here in Hillsborough County. There's a controversy about a Confederate statue, right? And, you know, we saw this, Henry, we're in New Orleans, of course. Mayor Mitch Landrieu got rid of some Confederate artifacts in the last month, and it's very controversial in the South. And I think in Tampa, there's a real big pushback among some of these supporters of Southern heritage. And this story is going to kind of get – I'm kind of covering it pretty closely here, and I think that's going to get more interesting as it goes along. And in a way, it's a sideshow issue too, right? I mean, again, it's one of these culture war issues. It's not really about policy, about, you know, making things better for – you know, people in the Tampa Bay area or what have you. But the culture wars issues are big down here in the South when it comes to, say, you know, Confederate statues and the like. So that's something else I've been working on this week. And, of course, hey, you know, we got a budget passed, right? I mean, yesterday the legislature, we got a medical marijuana bill passed. So some things have been happening up there in Tallahassee for better or worse. But you know, that was pretty big news yesterday.
Yeah, well, let's touch on that in just a moment. I want to interrupt our narrative and our discussion here, Mitch, because I know you're probably as broken up as this as I am, and I just saw this come over on my screen here, and maybe you've already seen this, and I hope that what audience is listening here is ready for a little bit of a shock. Batman has died. Adam West has passed at age 88. And, yeah, for a certain generation, and actually in reruns, multiple generations, Adam West was sort of ever present, and he has now gone on to his bat cave in the sky, I guess. So.
Yeah, I mean, right, for those of us who grew up in a certain time, you know, the Batman, the original Batman, the TV show in the 60s, he was the Batman. He never really, right, can anybody name another role that Adam West did, though, right? I mean, he was an actor for a long time, but certain roles.
He He had a character on a Nestle's Quick commercial that recurred.
Okay, that's good. I don't recall that one.
Yeah, I think he was like a Captain Sailor guy. I will research that one, but I remember that. Because I think that's all he could get after Batman, that and car shows.
But hey, to live to 88 is a pretty cool thing, I think. You know, so hats off to Adam West.
Well, 88's the new 79, Mitch. You got a lot to look forward to. So tell us about the special session. What was the outcome on? And let's also take the local, because I know the Hillsborough has looked at the number of dispensaries. I think it's Hillsborough County, how they're going to allocate dispensaries around the county.
Yeah, and you know, that you're right, and I covered that on Wednesday. They basically announced that there's going to be 20 dispensaries. Hillsborough is a very huge county, but I think in the legislation, if I'm not mistaken, that was passed yesterday, the medical marijuana bill, I think that basically, I don't know if the cities even or the counties have their own jurisdiction on that. So that might all be for naught, and it will be controlled by the legislature. You know, the biggest controversy, at least among the advocates of medical marijuana, there's a lot of, you know, people say there's a lot of issues with this bill even having it been passed, is the fact that it does not allow for smokable marijuana, right? We would be, I think there's over 24 states in the country that have medical marijuana now. We would not be the first state to ban smoking of marijuana. Pennsylvania and New York also have it in their law that you have to do it, you know, in a non-smokable form. Now, the arguments you hear from people like Greg Stubbe and others in the legislature is simply that, well, smoking is bad for you, which it is. Smoking anything is bad for you. But again, there's you heard it said by the medical marijuana advocates that this thing passed 71-29%, and yet it seemed like all year long the legislature was trying to appease the 29% because they were still offended by the idea that this is actually going to happen, right? And so I know John Morgan has already said he's going to sue about this. He may not be the only one, because there are still some issues about, you know, although the legislation is a little more liberal in terms of, like, opening up the market, but then there was this thing, I don't know if that's still in the final bill, about allowing citrus growers to have a chance to, like, to grow marijuana because they feel bad about the citrus growers because of citrus greening and now the fact that it's really hurting them. So they're going to give them a crack. That just doesn't make any sense at all to me. But there's still a lot that we still will see how this thing is going to be implemented, you know, and it rolls out. But medical marijuana is coming to Florida later this year, basically.
Before you leave issue, because with all due respect to Senator Stubbe about that you shouldn't be smoking, I have heard other medical professionals say that as a way of achieving the correct dosage, they actually call the ability to smoke it as a titration of your dosage because of the quickness that you respond to it in a smokable fashion, and that the individual isn't waiting for the delayed effect of an edible, and they are able to match their needs for pain or whatever the condition is more exactly with a smokable form. And there is always, I understand, these vaporizers that would eliminate a lot of the smoke toxins.
Right. Yeah, no, I think that, you know, the legislature, again, there's going to be litigation about this. Who knows how long that will take place. But as of now, the bill they passed, we will not, you know, people who qualify chronic pain or through the listed diseases that you have to be able to get a prescription, right now you're not going to be able to smoke it. And so, the advocates are unhappy about that big time. It's interesting, Henry, because we had this whole kerfuffle between the Senate president and the House speaker and the governor, you know, and then they all made up yesterday. And it's one of these things where, again, when you live in Florida, it's all Republican on Republican violence, if you will. I mean, Democrats, you know, I know there's 15 senators and there's 79, House members or, you know, 41 members, I guess, of the House Democrat. But these Democrats are just bit players in this whole game, right? So it's basically, they've got no, once in a while they can kind of team up, you know, with some moderate Republicans in the Senate, especially on some things and kill some, but they consider bad bills. We are such a red state, right? I mean, we really are. With Donald Trump winning the presidency last year, this is a deep conservative political state. I don't think the population of the state is like that, but our political leadership is. And, you've got to just watch what these priorities of people like Richard Corcoran, Joe Negron, and Rick Scott want, because they're the ones at the table. And the Democrats, you know, aren't, basically. And it's been like that for a long time in Florida. And, I know sometimes people are critical of the legislature, but I have yet to see where the legislature really pays a price at the polls. And whatever happened this year, you know, again, we're not going to have an election for another, you know, more than a year in terms of a primary here. So, it keeps on trucking here in terms of Republican dominance in our legislature.
Well, I want to come back to the primary, especially for Senate, in just a moment. But just to wrap up on the special session, some of the other issues that were in play there was the funding for public schools, including universities. How did that play out?
Well, you know, I'm still not exactly sure. Rick Scott has not. So in terms of the higher education, yes, there were some Joe Negron got some money for the higher education. Universities got a lot of money, actually. That was a big pet project of Joe Negron. There's that controversy. Okay, now basically on state spending, it's $100 more per student next fall, so they can say that they're actually funding education more better than they have been, but Democrats say it's way too low still. But state colleges and universities are going to share between $60 million and 17 specific projects. Those were things that were vetoed last week by Governor Scott, but now they're in the new bill here. Let's see, like $12 million is going to a new school of international and public affairs at Florida International. Now, some people might call that a bit of a turkey. Miami-Dade's getting $4 million for a gymnasium. Florida Atlantic, $1 million for technology initiative. So higher education got some money there because I think that's, again, a priority of Joe Negron. But that controversial public school bill, that would really kind of help out charter schools. That is still – Rick Scott has not signed that yet. And that's something that everybody in public education wants him to veto. And he's got another week or so to decide whether he's going to sign that or veto it. So that's the next big thing to watch, what he's going to do here.
And also in the special session, one of the last things to wrap up about was Visit Florida, the use of tourism dollars other to attract tourism dollars, as well as the economic development programs. How did that play out?
Yeah, well, they're getting their money, okay? Visit Florida, I believe, is getting $76 million, I believe it is. And the interesting thing about that, and Enterprise Ford is getting money, but it's not going – Richard Corcoran was, of course, the House Speaker was against this all year long, right, and basically wanted to defund Enterprise Florida completely and really drastically reduce Visit Florida's funding. So they're getting money, but Corcoran calls this a win, and so does Americans for Prosperity, the Koch brothers group that calls all this stuff corporate welfare. They have redirected the money, apparently, in Enterprise Florida, so it's not going for incentives per se anymore, like it always has been. Conservatives call it choosing between winners and losers. It's going to a different type of fund, and so Rick Scott is happy, apparently, because he got his money where he wanted there. And Richard Corcoran says he's happy too, and so is AFP. They say they're okay with this. So, those arguments, because it's interesting, right? Because I thought the whole thing was no, those they shouldn't get any money, and they're getting a lot of money, But Corcoran insists that they were successful in how that money is going to be spent in the future, and it's not going to be quote unquote corporate welfare like. So, again, between the Republicans up there, the power players, they're all walking away happy about this.
We've been speaking with Mitch Perry. He is journalist from FloridaPolitics.com, StPetersBlog.com. You can find him on Facebook and Twitter. And wrapping up here, I want to talk to you about a favorite son, if you will, of the south part of Tampa Bay here in Manatee County in particular, Carlos Baruff. He is chairing the Constitutional Revision Committee with a little bit of controversy, some might say. But I'll ask you about that. But the other thing that I saw recently is that he's thinking about running or rerunning for the U.S. Senate in the state of Florida again. And I'm wondering, which year would that be? And if so, who would be his primary opponent?
So I have not heard that rumor about Carlos Baruff thinking of running for Senate since the story, everybody assumes that Governor Scott is going to be the man. I've been saying that even if Scott is the, runs, he will not be the only Republican, named Republican. I just don't believe that every Republican will sit down and go, I can't do that. You're hearing actually reports that Richard Corcoran, who everybody assumes that he has said he will either run for governor or nothing at all. But some people think he actually might run for U.S. Senate, right? So I think that this is all kind of unformed. I hadn't heard about Baruff, and I would be shocked, though, Henry. I mean, if we do believe that Rick Scott is definitely intending to run, which I think I certainly do, Rick Scott is not prepared to fade away into the sunset. I mean, he definitely wants to stay in power in some fashion. They're supposed to be friends, though, right? So I would be surprised by that.
And the patron that appointed him to the Constitutional Revision Committee and the local airport board and the Southwest Florida Management Water
District. So who was saying anything about Baruff? Where are you hearing that from?
Pardon me?
Where are you hearing about Baruff thinking
that was in a newspaper article yesterday. I will find that and send it to you.
Okay. Was it our man Zach Anderson or who?
It was in the local paper. Yeah. But it was probably a state wire service. So.
Okay.
It's still sitting in my car, and I saw that at lunchtime yesterday, and I was like,
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I hadn't heard anything about that. And, Carlos Bruce got a lot of money, we know. He did nothing last year when he against Marco Rubio, which is too bad, by the way. I think Marco Rubio deserved to be seriously challenged for running for re-election since the man just weighed away a lot of, you know, basically a fashion that he really didn't like the job, didn't really want the job. And after he had done a successful run for president, he kind of came back, you know, kicking and screaming and going, okay, yeah, I'll take this thing because I got nothing else better to do. And yet he easily beat Baruth and then easily beat Patrick Murphy in the general last fall. So I thought, you know, and give credit to Carlos Baruth for being the only Republican to stay in the race against Rubio after Rubio came back in the race. Everybody else dropped out. You remember, they're all conceded the fact that they probably couldn't beat him.
Well, and if you watch him in local issues around here, you'll see that he seldom ever gives up on anything. But, Mitch, I normally would say goodbye to you before I mentioned who our guest is next week, but I think, I know you're quite a baseball fan, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Well, I'm very excited next week, and hopefully everything will come together. I will be speaking to a local gentleman, but with quite a past. Leon Harris may be known by some people that are listening. He's a local African-American who's active in Democratic politics and labor organizing, but he played on the Kansas City Monarchs in the old Negro League, and he is going to be on the show to talk about how that came to be as well as later parts of his life. But I'm very excited to actually speak to somebody that played on the Monarchs. That was 1952 or 53, so I think Jackie Robinson had already moved on. But he was more or less a contemporary of that, of Jackie Robinson and Satchel Paige and some of these other ones that had made the move into the major leagues right at that time. So,
all right.
And he's also going to be, here's another scoop for you, not just Bruce, I'll give you a baseball scoop too. He told me that there are about 40 remaining Negro League players, living players, including Willie Mays, and they will be I believe in Miami is where the All-Star game is on July 11th, and they will all be brought down to be honored there on this year's All-Star game.
Oh, that's great. You're right, though. It's happening next month, the All-Star game, in Miami.
So, all right. Well, Mitch, hopefully I'll give you a reason to listen to the podcast next week, and I know everyone will want to listen to this if they've only heard parts of it or they want to re-listen to parts they missed. Miss at henryrainshow.podomatic.com. And Mitch, again, thanks for all your patience today. I really appreciate you coming on.
Thanks a lot, Henry. Take care.
Bye. Bye. Well, again, thanks to Mitch Perry. And next week, Leon Harris. You can follow the show on Facebook, facebook.com/henryrainshow or just at Henry Rain Show. And that's also where you can find us on Twitter at Henry Rain Show. And thanks for all those that stick with us each week as we work through some of these issues and try and develop a place with some alternative, not just news, but an alternative way of doing radio. It certainly was alternative today. Again, thank you so much for being here. Let's close out with a little bit from the Manchester One Love concert. And again, the Black Eyed Peas with Ariana Grande. I believe 100,000 people at the stadium.
We are here, and we are together, and we are one. Put one thing in the air. If you're about oneness, togetherness, put one finger in the air. We only got one love, one love. We only got one love, one love. We only got one love, one love. That's all we got. One love, one love. That's all we got. One love, one love. Hey. One love, one love. Come on. One love, one love. Come on. One love, one love. Hey, we love every single one of you. Thank you so much for being out of this. To the mayor of London, the mayor of Manchester, the police force in Manchester, the police force here in London, and all these people who are to the song, I want you to help us out and sing along. Come on, everybody. People killing, people dying, children hurting, you hear them crying. When you practice what you, when you turn it around.